Welcome, everybody, to the Renegade HPG podcast. This is Travis, and my guest today is Alex Iglesias. Known by many through his tag Flying Debris, Alex has illustrated many of the iconic covers that grace modern Battletech sourcebooks and box sets. As concept artist for MechWarrior Online, he has redefined the look of Battlemechs for an entire generation of the IP's online devotees. In today's episode, we'll explore Alex's fandom and how he translates the Battletech universe into the visual medium for its fans. Alex, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
So I had a question that I keep meaning to kind of ping on the artist that I have online, but I always wonder kind of what is the relationship between kind of you as an artist and your real name and the tag that you use. You know, for you, it's Flying Debris, and, you know, everybody kind of has their own, whether it's DeviantArt or ArtStation. You know, kind of what inspires that, and kind of when is the appropriate time for guys like me crediting you to use Alex versus Flying Debris?
I don't know. Like, Alex or Flying Debris is kind of interchangeable, I guess, at this point. Yeah. I've just been using the name so long. It started off as a, you know, just a weird little joke on myself. I used to play a game called Road Rash, the motorcycle game. You fought other people on motorcycles, and, you know, you'd hit stuff in the scenery and you'd go flying off into the air down the road. And, you know, I just kind of replaced player A with Flying Debris guy as, you know, just like a funny thing. And I just kept on using it or shortening it to Flying Debris, you know, over the years and afterwards, and just started adding it to my, you know, art. Just been drawing for as long as I could remember. So I just kind of just appended that name to my art, and it just stuck that way. So, yeah.
And, you know, has that art always been centered around kind of in Mecca, or are there kind of other things that, you know, that you like to do kind of when you're not in your professional capacity?
I would say mostly mech stuff. Like when I was younger, I had like a few phases and stuff. Like when I was really, really young, it was usually just drawing whatever game I was playing at the time. So it might be cars, or it might be stuff with dinosaurs or whatever. But for some reason, the mech stuff just kind of stuck. And I think by the time I was in college, it had waned a bit. But like as soon as I got out, like I went hard back into it again. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it's just one of those things that just kind of feels natural to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if I'm not doing mech stuff, I might be just doing, I sometimes do like little funny doodles of, you know, like in the Pathfinder campaign that I'm in, I'm often doing like doodles of what happens to our group every now and then. But yeah, I prefer doing mech stuff, I guess.
And how do you first kind of stumble into the Battletech universe?
So, like, when I was, it must have been sometime around, like, the second or third grade. The cartoon had been out around that time. I think the Sega Genesis game had been out around that time. And MechWarrior 2 Mercenaries? No, MechWarrior 2 Mercenaries would have been later. But I think one of the earlier MechWarrior games, I think, had been out around that time. And I think my uncle had it. And I would later figure out how to play it. He was like one of the first people in our family to have a gaming computer.
Yeah.
And like he was still in high school at the time. So whenever I would visit grandma, you know, I'd mess on his computer when he wasn't on it. And, you know, play his games, and for whatever reason, like MechWarrior 2 Mercenaries just kind of like stuck in my imagination. I just started actively trying to consume any content I could find about it, whether it was like novels or source books or whatever, even though I never actually played the tabletop game or had any miniatures for like decades. I just liked collecting the books and just kind of absorbing the setting or whatever.
Right.
Learning the history.
Yeah, I talk about that a lot in my conversations. It's just the multitude of vectors that people take into the game. And, you know, for me, the first introduction came through tabletop, you know, with my stepbrothers when I was pretty young. I was probably like 11 or so. But even then they were older than me, 4 or 5 years older than me. And so, you know, I wasn't definitely their number one pick for who they wanted to game with when they were doing Battletech. Kind of my imagination was definitely sparked, you know, by it then. And as I went through high school, it was definitely, you know, I had a couple of the source books. I certainly had, you know, the original Tech Deck readout, the old 3025, you know, with all of Dwayne Luce's stuff, but that original Mech Warrior, where I remember building a character for myself, a lot of character building and mech building, and not actually playing them because there was no one to play them with, but it was just that process of building, you know, was a ton of fun. And then the novels were a big one, you know, just kind of reading through and building that universe. And it's been fun kind of going back and chatting with, you know, Mike Stackpole and Bob Charette, and I got Bill Keith coming on next month to talk to him, because that was my introduction. But it was fun. And I was also, you know, did a lot of art when I was younger. You know, kind of pursuing art was kind of a path that I could have taken but didn't take, you know, when I was young. But a lot of line art and reproductions of, you know, the Crusader and Centurion and all that kind of fun stuff early on. And so, you know, it was definitely a good way. And, you know, with the video games, I was the same way. So we definitely were not a gaming computer household. But so whenever my friends that were had, I could connect with MechWarrior 2. Or even the original MechWarrior. I have very kind of faint memories of the original MechWarrior when it came out, but I ended up playing it later. But those great games. But the cinematics, man, the cinematics were amazing on that. You're talking about the MechWarrior 2 Mercenaries.
I love the intro for that.
it's so good. And there's Art of Battletech on Twitter has been doing a lot of upscales of the various artwork that's out there, and he had done some
AI stuff.
Yeah, the AI upscales, and he did those two trailers, and he was actually announced that he was going to do, or in a comment he said he was going to do that for the animated series. Mm-hmm. And I reached out to him. I was like, oh man, I would love to kind of work together and host this for you if you don't have a YouTube channel, because I hadn't put together the YouTube channel he had for the other stuff with his Twitter tag at that point. And he was all for it. So we're working together to get a newly, not perfect, but really darn close, you know,
re-animated,
remastered of the animated series to be posted on Renegade HVG, definitely before Christmas. We're kind of holding it because episode 2 is rough. All the other ones look great. Episode 2 is a struggle. And so we're trying to find a better copy to upscale of episode 2, because we don't want people to get one episode in and then assume that the rest are going to be bad, because they're definitely not. They look amazing. It's fun. But it'll be a good little nostalgia trip. Maybe we'll do it like every Saturday morning for a couple of weeks, just for old time's sake. You know, back when we had to get up Saturday morning to watch our cartoons. You know,
I remember that.
We couldn't just sit in front of Netflix all day like my little one does these days.
Oh, yeah. I do love how even the Saturday morning cartoon Battletech has been kind of folded into the canon as being a Liren propaganda for kids.
Yes, I've said on other podcasts, I think whoever came up with that idea is a genius and should have gotten a raise, because it is one of the most ingenious ways to kind of fold something in. Because Battletech, and I was talking about that with Tex in last week's episode, Battletech does such a great job of not ever really retconning. You know, it's like, you know, once they've said something, they stick with it, you know, and if they kind of work around it, it's something like, you know, Jihad Secrets, where it's basically, you know, it's more like, you know, falsified history, you know, could have been, you know, unreliable narrators and stuff. But yeah, man, what they did with the animated series to fold that in is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I can't
remember where I've read it. I think it was one of those chapter introduction, like, fluff sections in one of the rule books, but I think they basically had a bunch of clanners that were just like chit-chatting with each other over comms while they were just sitting around bored in their mechs, and they had started quoting the cartoon at each other and like making fun of it.
Oh man, I gotta try to find where that is. That's awesome. That's too good.
I'll see if I can find it.
Send me the link. I'll put it in the description if we can find it, everyone that's listening. So what, in terms of kind of where, you know, where your imagination took you with your arts, you know, was it, you know, did you, you know, were you inspired more just kind of reading the source books and novels, or were it's kind of watching, like seeing the other artists that were putting out art at the time and kind of, you know, trying to kind of put your own spin on it, you know, kind of what drove you and kind of your own creative process?
I think it was like, yeah, it's hard to pinpoint actually. I've never really thought about it that hard. I just started, you know, as I got older, I just started drawing stuff in my own style, I guess. And, you know, I guess I was getting inspiration from a lot of the shapes you find on like attack choppers, tanks, that sort of stuff. And trying to apply some of those, that design language into mechs and stuff. And initially it was just, you know, fan art type things. I just kind of drew the mechs how I wanted to draw them at the time. And it just kind of, you know, felt right, felt good. I don't know. It was just kind of a fun thing to do. And then I find myself getting actually paid to do it. And it just kind of snowballed from there, I suppose. There wasn't really any like grand plan or anything. It just kind of sort of turned out that way, I suppose.
Yeah, and I'm curious about that kind of that transition for you from doing it kind of for pleasure to doing official. You know, I read kind of your previous interview where you basically, you know, brought your computer to one of the conventions and, you know, had Brent, you know, standing over your shoulder, yeah, to kind of see the talent. What, you know, kind of what, you know, was that transition like for you from just kind of doing it on your own, and kind of what adaptations did you have to kind of make to your approach, to your style once your work started to become official versus just kind of your own doodles?
I would say I did have to, like, once I started doing more official work, I did have to, like, I guess, take more care with the designs. I had to be a little bit more careful. I couldn't just do whatever. And there was certainly like more design constraints. But I don't know. It's not something that you actively think about, I guess, when you're in the middle of doing it. Right. It's like, I gotta draw a hunchback now, or I gotta draw an atlas now. I'm like, okay, I'll draw a hunchback, or I'll draw an atlas. And
right,
like, well, these shapes here don't kind of make sense, so I'm gonna try and put some details in there that make it work, or try to make this part make sense, or, you know, I think this will look cooler than the old art, but still acknowledges the details that were in the old art. It's just sort of, I don't know.
And I was thinking, you know, that's one of the ways that kind of your art has been different in terms of, you know, where it's coming from, because, you know, certainly once you tied into MechWarrior Online, you know, all those concepts that you were doing had to be translated into motion in the video game. And so,
yeah,
you know, you're, you know, certainly kind of with the OmniMax and the early MechWarrior games, but MechWarrior Online certainly took that movement to a different level. And so for you, you know, it seems like you were, you know, among the first, if not the first, where the designs that you were coming up with truly had to work mechanically, you know, in a realistic setting. And so I'm curious, you know, and a lot of your designs, you know, certainly have kind of stepped away from those original things, you know, and, you know, just by fact that the original mechs don't necessarily work, you know, in kind of realistic when they're actually moving or animation, whatever it may be, and kind of whereas yours do. And so I'm curious kind of when you're in that process and that decision-making, is there, you know, you talked about kind of looking at, you know, attack helicopters and whatnot, you know, is there a degree of studying mechanical engineering or understanding of that and, you know, understanding the practical aspects of engineering that you've had to develop and incorporate into that art?
I guess yes. It was definitely a learning process, because I'd say some of the earlier mechs that I did for MechWarrior Online, you know, like, you know, I think they, some of them had a few more gremlins than others. Some came out real good. Others, you know, there'd be things that I would do differently if I had the chance. Like, you know, some mechs I looked back and was like, oh, feet could have been bigger, or the feet could have been smaller, or I think the proportions, they could have done better. And like, you know, obviously some of the ones like the awesome, it's like, oh God, the thing's the size of a barn door. No, I shouldn't have done that. And you know, certain design considerations like, okay, well, this thing's got to be able to accept an LRM 20 here, or it's got to be able to accept, you know, three LRM whatever's there, or, you know, a gigantic pack of lasers when maybe the original design only had one. So like, there was a lot of things that over time, you know, there was extra considerations that had to be made. And like how the paint jobs would work on it, how the weapon holders would have to work to like accept different combinations of weapons, or in the case of like the clan mechs, whether they had, you know, the little extra hand bits of geo in there, where to stick AMS pods, is the cockpit too big? Is the cockpit too small? Like, there's like a lot of, you know, weird things there. Won't say I did a perfect job, but you know, it was a learning experience, I guess. Yeah. I'm happy with how most of the mechs came out.
What's kind of your crowning achievement? What's your favorite translation there into MechWarrior Online Medium?
King Crab.
King Crab? Awesome.
Yeah. I fought very hard to get the King Crab into the game. It was a very uphill battle. I think I was like suggesting the King Crab for like well over a year before it ever went in. I'm like, guys, we should do the King Crab. You should do the King Crab. Same with the Urban Mech. Urban Mech was even a tougher uphill battle.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure Bishop Steiner would celebrate that that push on your half, that lobbying effort. certainly, you know, kind of that kind of iconic King Crab art, you know, in the fog of war is a great one to stand out with your design there. But the old King Crab design, not so much, but I have always loved the regular crab design. You know, that was a good one, and I am a big fan of your redesign, you know, but it's a good one. So you know, you talked about kind of, you know, small feet, big feet, you know, too broad chested maybe, you know, what were, you know, if you had a choice to kind of go back and redo, you know, what's kind of number one on that list?
Honestly, I think I'd probably want to redo the Timberwolf. I think it probably could have squatted shorter and had more thinner legs. I probably chunked him up too much, and probably those side torso missile launchers, not the ears, but like the other ones probably ended up too big. Like, you know, stuff like that, I suppose.
Well, it's, you know, just from the observation, it seems like a lot of people struggle with those LRM launchers. You know, some people are just like, screw it, it's 15 holes, not even 20. You know, and it's like, no, it's 20. It's gotta be 20. It's gotta be at least 50% of the Timberwolf Primart out there has the LRM 15 on the shoulders and not the LRM 20. I've been doing a kind of a redesign project for the old CCG and kind of creating like a custom
I've
redo.
Seen some of them.
Yeah. I got a lot of your art on it. I'll pull them up here and I'll show you before we sign off, you know, if you want to check them out. But yeah, it's it's funny you're watching it, and as much as I can, I try to kind of match the art to the variant that I'm putting on. But and the Timberwolf definitely stands out. It's like, oh, I can't use this, I can't use that. But one of my favorite, you know, non-standard variant cards I got out there, because it is hard to find non-prime variants of Omnimex for art. But you're the Timberwolf D, the art from the, I think the, what is it, the Alpha Strike, you know, source book, I think, for
the one, The one where it's got ERPPCs and forward and backward launching SRMs.
SRMs, yes. Yes, I love that art. And I was so happy to find and be like, oh, I can make an odd variant of the Timberwolf here, you know, and have matching art with it. It was a triumph that evening, I'll tell you. It was still enjoyable. I finally got to the point where I can almost get them to print because I've been trying to kind of do a little customization of the template so it has a custom watermark for Renegade HPG and a custom rarity symbol. And so that's going to be one of the early ones to go to print for sure. But it's been fun, but it's revealed a lot about kind of the nuances of the art that you don't pick up kind of with a casual scan.
Oh God, I still have like my high school era BattleTech trading card collection. That was a game I did play a lot growing up. Like I actually played the CCG well before I ever actually played the actual proper tabletop.
Yeah.
Like me and some of my high school buddies would play it during lunch. I sucked so bad. Like all of my friends were like CCG card sharks. Like they knew those games backwards and forwards. You gave them any kind of card game, they would assemble like some killer deck, know how to play everything. And meanwhile, I was just like, I like this card.
Yeah.
I think it looks like cool.
Yeah.
I can't make my deck without this card. It looks too cool.
And awesome. Well, we're definitely in the same boat there. My memory doesn't work well for being top CCG player because I don't retain information that way. I'm more of an X-Wing miniatures type of guy where it's a spatial movement is my strength. But that's part of why, you know, I've been trying to kind of redo them because I was like, oh, well, all the good mechs, you can't play all the good mechs because they're horrible in this game. You can't even get big mechs out because they cost too much. And so I'm going to redo it. And so that's been like my, you know, when I'm watching TV at night, you know, just kind of redesign a card. I think I'm up to like 270 cards. I pretty much got almost a full base set of redesigned cards. And I actually, just the other night, I finished finished all of the mechs from the TRO 3050. So I've got 30, 25, and 3050 all done. And then, you know, 100 other miscellaneous ones. So I need to find somebody who can do some web design and basically get a web page up and get all the cards out there. And so that people can kind of print them at home and kind of just like a low resolution. So we're not worrying about any copyright issues, put them on the tabletop and play. They can actually play some of their favorite mechs with amazing art by Alex Iglesias, among many others. But it's been fun.
Actually, to rewind just a second, I would say the card game, some of the art for that was actually, you know, something that would influence, you know, me in the years afterwards. Like I can't remember his name off the top of my head. It was Chris something or other, but he did the artwork for
Chris Langley. Yeah.
Yes. Chris Langley. Yeah. He did the art for, I think the, crossbow, I think Redline Pilot, the Nova Prime, and probably a number of others. And I remember looking at that art a whole bunch and trying to like, you know, learn some lessons from it. Awesome. I guess.
A lot of people have, you know, I've kind of asked people what their favorite art is, you know, on the BattleTech CCG Facebook page, you know, and some of my videos, that was kind of a focus when I was doing some CCG topics. And Langley definitely came up. It's kind of a lot of people's favorite artists there. I actually have my curated deck sitting right here beside me, and the Redline Pilot's sitting right on top of that deck right now.
Love Redline Pilot. You could throw him on so many things, and it just turns it into like a nightmare.
Yeah, he's definitely a favorite. Well, what's, you know, talking about Clint, you know, are there any other artists, you know, kind of early artists that were inspirational for you, or just, you know, kind of, you know, just really favorites that you like to look back and kind of, you know, enjoy?
I'm a fan of Mark Harrison. He did some stuff for 2000 AD comics.
Okay.
He did this little graphic novel that I just kind of found one day in a game store while my friends were playing some other stuff, and it was like it was called Glimmer Rats, and it was, I think, early examples of like digital art type stuff, like using Photoshop or whatever existed at that time for painting stuff together. And he also did like some of the covers for some Warhammer 40K books, like the Titanicus graphic novels. And I really liked some of the effects that he got, some of the stuff he did with textures. And, you know, that was a direct inspiration, I think. I tried to recreate a lot of stuff back in around when I was in college, and I just fell very short of it. But I still, you know, tried, I guess.
Well, definitely, you know, I was kind of curious your perspective, you know, looking at kind of, you know, certainly in kind of the original BattleTech artists, guys like, you know, Holloway and Liebenstein and, you know, and even Jensen, you know, you know, a lot of those are all paintings then translated in. And now, you know, the medium has very much changed kind of the digital, you know, I'm curious kind of as an artist and from a historical sense of kind of your perceptions of how that evolution has kind of impacted the medium and kind of how you approach your art. And, you know, if you even have skills that are outside the digital medium, if you've tried beyond, you know, line arts and doing it on the computer.
I work so much on the computer that I've largely forgotten what like non-digital media usually feels like, unfortunately. I will every now and then, if I've got like a blank piece of paper in front of me and some time to kill, I'll, you know, do some doodles and realize, oh wait, you know, this is an actually completely different process, and, you know, hammer out some doodles that normally I don't think I'd be able to do on digital, just because the feeling of pencil on paper just isn't quite the same as stylus. Like, you don't have the same feedback. But you also can't quite do the same things as you can with digital. So they're like very different things. As far as like how it influenced the industry or, you know, that sort of thing, I think it's just a matter of just ease, because if you already start working digitally, you don't have to worry about the hassle of scanning stuff in and cleaning things up. You just already started, you know, from a digital standpoint, and you can send files to whoever needs them. It's just considered more practical, I think. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I guess if you really wanted to still work with like non-digital media, like I think you still could. It would require a little bit more work, a little bit more time.
Yeah.
I think it's still possible, but just in terms of how the industry is, I think it's usually considered just easier just to go digital.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
And, you know, I've noticed, and, you know, certainly the modern, you know, art coming out of BattleTech, whether it's through MechWarrior Online or HBS or Catalyst, you know, is, far higher consistency and quality. But, you know, the one kind of criticism I would have for it is that it's kind of lost the kind of almost, you know, imagination fantasy of kind of those early pieces. You know, certainly there's nothing like what was, you know, like a, you know, Tales of Black Widow cover or, you know, something like that that's coming out in modern, you know, with, you know, and I can ask you this because it's, you know, the criticisms doesn't apply as much to you, because I think that yours have a little bit more. It's not just a mech shooting, a really cool mech shooting stuff, you know, which I think is a lot of the art nowadays. You know, I like things like, you know, your Firestarter art, you know, and the quick draw that you have out there, and that Timberwolf D variant. There's just a more, I really enjoy kind of your work because of the engaging environment, that it's not just always a mech shooting, you know, which is fun. But it doesn't kind of capture the imagination as the same way of the other stuff. And do you feel like this translation to a digital medium has kind of, you know, caused that kind of regression to kind of just be a really, really good looking version of kind of a basic scene versus like a really imaginative kind of scenario narrative in an illustration?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily like digital that might, you know, be responsible for that, because, you know, you could go pretty much anywhere with digital. It might just be, you know, potentially oversight, or just, you know, people not focusing in that direction. I wouldn't put the blame on digital there. One thing I was thinking of though is like when you're talking about like some of the older art of Battletech, I think there is an aspect there of when the setting was still kind of like raw and you could just kind of almost go wherever with it. And when stuff hasn't quite been, I guess, set in place and established, like I think there's more like room for craziness, I guess, and like weird little diversions. Like if you look at that Black Widow art piece, like I only started examining it closely just the other day. I'm like, why does that mech have three legs?
Three legs, yeah.
Why is she stomping on a bunch of alien looking androids? What is going on in this picture? Like,
but that's totally true. And as somebody had commented, because Kasai had posted it, I think on Instagram, kind of that Tales of Black Widow, and someone had commented that they had taken the time and extensively looked into a lot of the pieces of the early Battletech, whether it's, you know, that piece about Holloway or the Fox's Teeth, and came to the conclusion that nothing in that picture is truly Battletech. You know, it's kind of just an interpretation. But you know, on the other hand, you've been in Battletech your entire adult life, and it took you till just recently to realize that. So, you know, it's like, you know, yeah, right. You have to, you know, so it doesn't, so the impact is there, and, you know, maybe the detail and nuance, you know, wasn't limiting to those people, you know, for the imagination. Maybe it just kind of, you know, holds it back these days. But people need to be all right throwing in little, you know, weird looking, you know, spacesuits and three legged mechs in the background, as long as it looks beautiful and captured.
And I think there's also like some elements of, you know, just constraints and just raw jankiness, I guess, in some of the older stuff. Like many of the older mech designs were just $50 a pop illustrations that were just banged out crazy fast, you know, not really looking, you know, 20 years ahead, that people would still be, you know, basing entire things off of like this particular line art as if it was gospel, you know, and like some of the internal art, like just the little black and white, either pencil or ink illustrations, you know, many of the artists may not have even known in detail what exactly they were drawing. It's like, oh, we need a this, that, or something else. And like, okay, here we go. And there's just certain aspects of the uncertainty and, you know, the time constraints just created these weird little eccentricities that gave it like character and stuff. And
well, having kind of been connected to kind of like now the bigger corporate side of things, you know, whether it's through Prana or Catalyst, you know, have they now said, you know, officially, you know, and you can be specific with your answer in general, like of ignore that, it's okay, you know, even though that was a predecessor, ignore that mech, completely redo it, or use this as your guide and not that as your guide, you know, kind of as you've gone through that process, you know, whether it's, you know, I know you've done mostly mechs and not so much characters. The characters have been all over the place, you know, so.
I think Battletech probably still has, like, there's no real there's examples of, but I don't think there's been any like set in stone of, you know, this is how characters look. And frankly, it's a big setting across a lot of planets. It's a big universe. So there is always room for all sorts of, you know, non-standardized appearances. It's not like Warhammer 40K where like every space marine, you know, has a certain, you know, look across the board. But like, as far as, you know, how, like what to ignore, what not to ignore, like a lot of the times I'm kind of left up to my own devices and then get feedback kind of like after the fact of like, oh, hey, can we make like the fists larger on this or smaller, or, you know, can we change the composition thereof? But It's usually not anything too nitpicky, I guess.
Gotcha. I know, even, you know, kind of for me and kind of exploring my imagination, when I, you know, take something, you know, example, like, you know, a Shadowhawk or something, you know, kind of the modern version of the Shadowhawk, you know, versus kind of the old Dugrum, you know, style. And I kind of think it was like, well, you know, after 300 years of repairs and refits and whatnot, you know, maybe it's both, you know, maybe it came out of the factory line, you know, in the Dugrum look. And, you know, after 300 years of, you know, being blown up and put back together again, it looks like, you know, the HBS, you know, Shadowhawk that's bouncing out there, a little bit more mechanical. And, you know, kind of, if you, you know, it just occurs to me, you know, saying this, that you can tie it into Star Wars and you'll look at like episode one ships versus, you know, episode four ships, you know, and it's just kind of like things, you know, when things aren't as stable politically, then, you know, you got to use what parts you can, and, you know, it might be the same ship, but, you know, the Y-wings from Clone Wars don't look like the Y-wings in episode four, you know, it's because it's, you know, they do the same thing. It's still a Y-wing, but it's a lot more gritty.
You know, yeah. And honestly, like, that would be something that I would love to see explored. Unfortunately, from, you know, production standpoints, like, you probably don't have the time or budget to make like 10 different atlases when you're still trying to make like a broad sweep of different mechs. So stuff ends up, I guess, artificially standardized, even though you've got like 300 or more years of production lines of like a given mech in some cases. And like you look at a Mustang from like 1985 compared to like a Mustang from, you know, 2000, whatever. Mm-hmm. They're both technically Mustangs, but, you know, they don't look anything alike. Not really. It would stand to reason that the same would apply to mechs and equipment and stuff like that in Battletech. But yeah, the budget and bandwidth to explore those sort of subtle differences, unfortunately, I think is out of the scope of
fan canon stuck in there. You know, I'm always interested in kind of collaborative side, and you work with a broad team there in the art department, you know, with MechWarrior Online. Kind of, you know, how does your role fit in kind of as concept artist with what everybody else is doing, and kind of where does your role begin and end, and where do those other people come into play in terms of what we finally see on the screen?
For the most part, it's been, Alex, we need this particular mech designed. I design the mech, and it just kind of goes off to the modelers and animators and texture artists and designers. Like, the designers are usually putting on like the hard points, the animators are doing the animations, the texture artists are doing all the skins for it, as well as like the base skin. Modelers end up having to figure out like all the damage states and, you know, and like destroyed states, and, you know, how the weapons that we've made like fit on the chassis and all that kind of stuff. And, you know,
and weapons is a topic that someone had kind of brought up in one of the forums, is just like the work that you've done just in terms of bringing consistency in terms of kind of the look of the weapons, you know, and the function of the weapons, whereas, you know, it's definitely not that way kind of in a lot of the earlier line art from one unit to another. Kind of what, you know, in terms of that process, what have been kind of the kind of hurdles that you've had to troubleshoot in terms of, you know, creating that new consistency and that new method of designing weapons that need to be used for a variety of different designs?
So initially, very early on in MechWarrior Online, we didn't have that standardization at all. And then sometime later, we started trying to get some standardization, and then eventually we ended up going towards a modular system. I would say much of that was mainly due to how many headaches were being caused production-wise by not having like a standardized thing, because it was a massive time sink to not only figure out, you know, the overall scale of weapons for like a just a given mech compared to other mechs, but like how do we fit in extra weapons once you start customizing it, and how big are those extra weapons? And you know, unfortunately I can't say it was so much of an intentional thing as far as like aesthetics go, because you know, in my opinion, or not opinion, but like just as an artist, I would love to just have one off, you know, everything gets like a nice, cool, customized housing. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, just from like actually getting things done at a reasonable amount of time, it was just not something that was workable long term. So being able to have like a more standardized approach to the weapons, so that you know that a medium laser is going to be X big and probably fit into these types of housings, made it a lot more like functional and efficient for getting designs done. And where we could, you know, we tried to make like a few exceptions when like a mech's appearance was very much based around something that could not be easily standardized, like if we followed the modular logic for doing like the Rifleman, for example, like we'd end up with these tiny little barrels underneath the AC-5s, and I'm like, no, the Rifleman has two long barrels, it's got to have, you know, long lasers. So like we ended up stretching those things out. We made the exception, but unfortunately we can't make a million bazillion exceptions. Fine.
So what are some kind of areas that you would be excited to kind of explore moving forward? You know, places that you haven't really gone, whether it's kind of mech designs or kind of concepts that you haven't been able to kind of put into that digital medium yet?
Something I've always wanted to like do more exploration of is like weapons and equipment.
Okay.
I guess it's just one of those things that I'm just kind of, I don't know, just weirdly interested in, because it's just one of those aspects of Battletech of like, you know, how these mechs actually blow each other up, or you know, interfere with each other or interface with each other. I'm interested in how this AC-20 actually works. You know, what kind of calibers is it? You know? Mm-hmm. Like, what kind of forms certain types of equipment take? Mm-hmm. And like what kind of variety there is in terms of like the overarching setting.
Like, now, have you had any kind of influence in Sazers in terms of how MechWarrior Online kind of portrays those weapons and how they discharge and look? You know, certainly kind of the PPC has gone through so many different iterations.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in the video games. You know, have you been involved in that process? And, you know, are there any things that you really like about, you know, how MechWarrior has interpreted, or kind of ways that you want to kind of explore a little bit further?
Oh, I originally did want like weapon manufacturer variety type of stuff. Unfortunately, okay. You know, some of that sort of fell out of scope. Some of that is still kind of expressed in there. I did end up like advocating for like the burst fire ACs. Mm-hmm. And the stream fire LRMs. But like if it was up to me, I would have gone very crazy with it, I guess. Yeah.
Give us an example. Can you share? You know, what's kind of a direction you go that just kind of breaks the mold that you kind of have in your head?
Well, like the people that are doing the guy that's doing like the Merc Tech mod for MechWarrior 5, pretty good example. Like, he's kind of already doing what I sort of already wanted to do, I guess. Okay. Just go, like, weird levels of detail in terms of different fire rates, different projectile velocities, different types of damage and ammo, and, you know, all sorts of weird performance niches and stuff like that.
Yeah. And the way I kind of always imagined it, you know, was that, you know, using lasers, you know, small, medium, large lasers as examples, you know, that it's not like this company produces a medium laser and this company produces a large laser and this company produces a small laser. It's just these companies produce lasers and they run this huge gamut. You know, they all damage things, you know, but they're classified a medium just because it's a laser that happens to do damage within that range, you know, of what would be medium, and large is in that range of what would be a large beam, you know, but whether it's kind of, you know, a pulse or consistent, you know, a consistent beam, or whether it's red or green or whatever it may be, you know, that that's all just kind of very specific to the manufacturer, not necessarily to the laser.
But like pie in the sky, like if I had, you know, infinite budget or whatever, I would have loved to do something like, you know, almost Borderlands level of, you know, weapon variety and just, unfortunately, you know, from a gameplay standpoint, you know, you could say it would definitely like muddy the waters, because I would love to have, you know, medium lasers that maybe almost do the damage of a large laser, but their range is like, you know, completely garbage and their heat is through the roof, or, right, and they maybe explode, or just, you know, all sorts of like weird little, you know, niches here and there, or having, you know, some LRMs that are garbage for indirect fire, but like great for brawling, and others that might be awful at direct fire, but like they're great for rocket artillery, or, you know, maybe, you know, some machine guns that are closer to automatic grenade launchers than typical machine guns. I guess one thing that is kind of, I guess a fingerprint of my input, I guess, in MechWarrior 5 as far as weapons behavior, but I did push pretty hard for having ballistic weapons not have a hard range cutoff.
Okay.
Rather proud of that, because I always advocated that it is a lot more satisfying to arc an AC-20 at long range and it'll hit something rather than have the shell magically disappear. at an arbitrary range.
But awesome.
Yeah. I just like realistic weapons, I guess.
You know, going into that PPC, kind of what, you know, because that's the one that seems to have the most variety, you know, what do you imagine a PPC discharge to look like and sound like?
Realistically, it would probably be almost instant. It would probably just be like, you know, it just a quick instant hip scan beam with like, you know, some sort of electrical discharge after it. That's realistically, though. I do like the sort of, you know, throwing a projectile with a trail behind it. And I am nostalgic for the old MechWarrior 2 style, like PPC blobs that potentially outrun. So I honestly would have loved to have, like, you know, all varieties present, you know, like having some PPCs that are hit scans, some that are projectiles, some that are just slow moving, you know, orbs, some that maybe are like, you know, plasma cannon type stuff in other games. I don't know. Yeah. I think there's a lot of room for variety because BattleTech is really big.
So there's a, you know, almost a renaissance of BattleTech happening these days. You know, kind of, you know, is there anything that's, you know, particularly exciting for you, or, you know, that you're kind of looking forward to coming up? You know, certainly, obviously, outside of kind of what you have control of or what you could reveal, you know, for Prana, but just in general for the BattleTech universe, you know, kind of what excites you about kind of this new kind of generational wave that we're experiencing here?
I am honestly always excited for just from being embedded in the industry now, like the stuff that excites me the most is what the fans come up with, honestly. Okay. Just like, okay, well, there's my regular work that I'm doing. What's going on over there?
Well, what's kind of most fun kind of, you know, fan idea or suggestion or input that you've been able to kind of incorporate either into the game or into an art piece?
Oh, I would say I like putting like little Easter eggs into my art every now and then. Not always, but like whenever I get the chance, I really like putting like little gags in there. As far as like, I do like showing my coworkers stuff that people are like working on, like, you know, fan wise and saying and being like, see,
yeah,
there's that thing that I mentioned like forever and a half ago, and now look, they're doing it.
Well, maybe to give some of those kind of those amateurs a little shout out, you know, are there, you know, any that you want to kind of, you know, call some attention to, anybody out there kind of in the non-official capacity doing some great work that you want to kind of, you know, let them know that, you know, that you're a fan, that, you know, you like what they've been doing?
I'm a big fan of what Magnum GB is doing with Merktech. I'm a fan of the Rogue Tech team for like HBS. Mm. Navid is doing some good stuff with the reloaded HUD mod that he's been working on, and there's like a few other teams that I've been keeping tabs on, that, you know, they got some interesting stuff going on. Project Winter War, and like a few others also either working on their own HUD mods or doing overhauls and things of that nature. And yeah, I'm really excited to see where they end up taking things.
Yeah, and that HUD brings me to a question that I almost forgot to ask you, but I want to kind of pick your brain, because you've been tasked with kind of translating the outside of the mechs into reality. I'm curious what Alex Iglesias is imagining of what the inside of a battle mech cockpit actually looks like. Like, what is in there? Are we talking, you know, pedals, joysticks, you know, neural helmet wires, you know, heads up, you know, what is, you know, just take us a little visualization of what the BattleTech cockpit is in your head.
If it was just up to me.
Yeah, just up to you. You don't have any bosses. Just have your imagination. You know, what's in there? How does a human pilot a mech?
I would probably lean away from the whole transparent canopy kind of approach. I would probably do something more like, you know, enclosed cockpit with you know, camera feed type stuff going on. Probably be a mixture of heads-up displays and, you know, internal readouts, and probably just for cool factor should probably have like nests of wires and and greebles just kind of like comfying you in there, I guess. Yeah. As far as like joysticks and pedals, I mean, yeah, I suppose so. That's never been too much of a of something I've focused on or thought that much about.
But yeah,
like I do like the aesthetics of giant overwhelming helmets, sensors, and
yeah,
I did have a lot of fun playing around with some of those ideas for the character portraits in MechWarrior 5.
Awesome.
You know, like going everywhere from like, oh, this is just someone with a hat on or whatever in their mech to someone with like a gigantic like dryer on machine on their head
with a little viewport on the front.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned in terms of what you're talking about with the heads up display and not being kind of a canopy. I was just watching a video while you were talking. I'm trying to remember where it was that I saw it, and I believe it was through the through the new animation that DC Bruins is working on that he hasn't published yet, but he had sent me kind of a draft of the concept art. But he has a, you know, there's a breach that is kind of cataloged in that, a breach of a cockpit. And you see, it was the first time I had seen it in an animation or video, something where you see the breach come from the inside and the you see the screen. And instead of just like this hand punching through a cockpit, basically it's like a TV gets broken, you know, and hand comes through it and the screen goes out, you know, and I was like, oh, that's awesome. You know, so basically, yeah. You know, it's not a piece of glass. It's, you know, it's just a place where that heads up, that HUD is displayed on the inside and, you know, you're not looking outside at all, which
it's it's a funny story too. Cause like the whole thing with transparent cockpits in BattleTech was just one of those things that was a weird runoff type of thing that just snowballed into its own thing and just kind of became established. But like, if you read, I think one of the first BattleTech novels was Decision at Thunder Rift, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like in the descriptions there, like the what appears like a canopy in most of the art was just supposed to be like a little, you know, protective pane over a bunch of sensors. Mm. It wasn't supposed to be like a windshield, and I think they even called it out as such, like in the novel, like it would be ridiculous to have a windshield, you know. But like
a shoot here sign, a giant shoot here sign, yeah, on the mech, you know, you're saying that's a bad idea. Yeah,
but like I think it was like a whole thing of just, you know, it looks like a windshield, and later artists just started drawing it as a windshield, and it just kind of kept on going to where like now it's like, well, obviously it's a windshield. Look at all the other artwork that has a windshield, and it's just kind of like a self-referential feedback type of thing. But like, I don't think it was originally meant to be, you know, windshields.
Yeah, as cool as the Battlemaster looks, that's having a canopy that's, you know, half of your torso is probably not a great idea in a battle. But yeah, I can see that.
Cool. Although, I mean, I can't see how that wouldn't be a windshield, so I guess I have to eat my words a little bit there.
Who knows? You gotta figure it out. Maybe it's like, maybe Scotty traveled back in time to save some whales, and he taught them how to do transparent aluminum, you know, for the BattleTech cockpit. So they are very strong. They're just clear.
Apparently, transparent aluminum is a thing.
It is now. Yes.
I think you just have to bombard aluminum with X-rays or something like that. I forget how it works.
The question is, can it take a PVC bolt, you know, and live? But
actually, one other thing was. Like I, for the longest time, I like just in my imagination, I always try to rationalize like the 9 points of armor maximum of a mech's like head, I guess, as not actually being like the whole head, but just like whatever passes for the exit hatch.
Okay.
I guess, because you have to have a weak point for being able to eject through it.
Right.
So the rest of the head would just be torso armor level of protection, I guess. Although that doesn't really make sense, because that would mean that, you know, you could be nailed right in the face in a Battlemaster, and you know, your engine is taking damage instead of you. So it doesn't really make sense, but that's how I prefer to rationalize it, rather than arbitrarily weak cockpits that can get shot out at any time.
Well, it seems like the mech, like the Thunderbolt or so, that would follow very well. You know, Thunderbolt's cockpit is just kind of like, you know, almost in the right torso, right? You know, just kind of set down in there. But yeah. Well, cool. Well, this has been fun. Before I let you go, I'll pull up a little screen share. I'll show you some of these CCG cards that I've kind of plugged in for you.
All right.
Let me know what you think. And once I get them printed up, I'll get your address. I'll have to send some over your way. Let's see where they are. All right, there we go. You seeing it? I got the Akuma up right now.
Oh, yes. Oh, man, I did that one like so long ago.
Yeah. It's funny. What have you seen kind of in the evolution of your own art style over time? You know, when you look back, where you're like, oh, you know, I've definitely gotten better at this or that.
I think one of the things I had a lot more of in like old art is just like a nice amount of messiness that I probably should try and recapture, because I kind of miss it.
Yeah. Getting through. This is yours, isn't it?
It
was hard to find the credit on these images. Yeah, this one's one of my favorites. The Firestarter is definitely a mech I loved as a kid. One of my custom mechs that I made was based like a Firestarter variant, and it had two compartments in its chest that it can kind of walk into a lake and fill up with water, so it could kind of control its own fires if it needed to.
Oh, like the PPC on the Vindi.
So yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's some of like my earliest.
Oh yeah.
Like I think this was when it was still fan art, and it just kind of I was still early on in my relationship with Catalyst, and they had me like, "Hey, can you touch up some of your fan art we want to put in this book?" And I was like, "Sure."
Excellent. You're gonna pay me not even for creating from scratch or something I already did. Yeah, you're the only one with good Kit Fox art out there. It's definitely no other options. And this is like I said, whenever I find a variant that's out there, I love putting that onto a card. But get that Nova.
Oh yeah, I had a lot of fun with that particular Alpha Strike cover.
Yeah, the center mechs are in a mission card that I have called Brawl. I don't have it up here. Is this yours?
Yeah.
I love the look of the Piranha. It's just something about it, and it also brings me back to, I don't know if you ever got the chance to go back and play Mech Warrior 1. Go back and like on an old DOS, proxy or something. But in Mech Warrior 1. The kind of glitch in the game is you could take the Locust and just like load it up with machine guns and just run up really fast to like Battlemasters and machine gun their legs off. Mm-hmm. And so this is the Piranha, is like a nostalgia trip for me of MechWarrior 1 of just blowing legs off with machine guns.
Oh, geez. It's
glorious.
I had fun with that one too.
Yeah. Yeah, this is kind of going back to the atmosphere that I was talking about. It's not just a mech shooting. I like it. Yeah, and then I did some updates on the supports there, and I think the Timberwolf, yeah, there's the last one.
Oh yeah,
that was a really fun one. I actually did a video of me kind of building this, taking people through the process, and then Prime. So this is the one you think should be a little bit boxy or a little bit squatter?
Oh no, I'm happy with this one. I meant like the MWO one.
Gotcha. Cool. Yeah, those are all my CCGs with your art on them. Yeah. Well, very cool. Well, I appreciate you taking the time and chatting with me, Alex. It's been kind of fun to kind of get in your head, kind of explore that creative process. And I know it's the fans are, really kind of enjoy your work. You can see it definitely in all the forums, and they appreciate that what you've done.
Oh, thanks.
Bringing those mechs to life and kind of that unified style through MechWarrior Online. And so it's been fun for me as a fan, and kind of watching it and enjoying it and kind of getting back into BattleTech and having all that great artwork out there. So thanks for that. Thanks for chatting. And
thank you. Well,
look forward to all the future pieces that start coming up. For I know you're on DeviantArt and ArtStation under Flying Debris Guy on Twitter. Are there any social media tags? Are you on Instagram or Facebook if people want to find you there?
Nah.
Just those. you're a smart man. I like Instagram. I like it's kind of like almost like a Pinterest for, not housewives. But yeah,
Twitter. Yeah, I don't post enough of my stuff. I am like years behind. I really should get on that.
Well, it's a benefit of having a full-time job where you're doing your art, is you can do the stuff you get paid for. It's like you don't have all the free time to be posting the free stuff out there. But if you do, pull up some of those old hard drives and throw some pieces. I'm sure we'll enjoy them. But awesome. Well, thanks a lot. Thanks everyone for listening. Thanks Alex for chatting. And we'll catch you on the next episode.
All right.